You're listening to the Bible teachings of Reality Church Stockton. For more info, please visit our website at realitystockton.com.
Our text today is taken from Jonah chapter 1, beginning in verse 1. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. This is the word of the Lord.
So when Pastor Christian asked if I could teach on this Sunday, we really settled on the fact that I would probably preach a sermon in the book of Jonah because we were spending our time in Jonah at camp. So it was just a bit easier for me to not prep two different things. But it got me thinking after I had said yes and I had started thinking about, well, what would we do in Jonah together this morning, that that I had preached in Jonah before as one of your pastors. So I kind of went back in the Wayback Machine and I thought through, well, when was that sermon and what were the circumstances around it? And so this is my ordination here. And it was 7 years ago in June. So I just passed my 7-year mark as one of your pastors. And you'll recognize that is the Teen Center. So shout out to anyone who's been here since the Teen Center days. As Chris mentioned, we are a nomadic church. We have moved around a lot. But actually, about 2 months after this picture was taken, I actually preached in the book of Jonah. I actually preached Jonah 1:1-3. So the Lord has orchestrated this all together in a really beautiful way. I've been a pastor of yours for about 7 years. And almost 7 years to the day, we opened this text together. I think that's really awesome and just a real testament to how God weaves these stories together. And so I am committed to, in 7 years, also preaching in Jonah chapter 1, verses 1-3. So mark your calendars, August 2031, we'll be back in here. But the thrust of that sermon 7 years ago, I think is really still the thrust of this morning. And that is that our God speaks and he calls us. And sometimes he calls us into difficult things, but it's worth it. It's worth it. So our 3 points this morning, how we're going to travel through this passage are the God who speaks, the God who calls, and the God who pursues. We're going to try to keep it like real simple this morning. So first, the God who speaks. So I don't know what your sort of context is for the story of Jonah. Maybe you're just like, I don't know. I just know that a guy got swallowed by a fish, right? And that is your sort of the limit of what you know of the story. Well, I think it's really important to note that Jonah's story in the book of Jonah begins with him having a meeting with God. In Jonah chapter 1, verse 1, this is how the story begins. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah. Now for Jonah, this probably wasn't a new thing. His job was a prophet. That was his job, was to hear the word of the Lord and then to communicate that word to the people. This was his regular routine, or we would assume his regular routine. So perhaps in the context of Jonah's story, this is perhaps not a shock in and of itself that God would speak to him. The reality of the God of Israel, or Yahweh, as he's referred to in this verse, right, when L-O-R-D is in all caps, that's a placeholder for the covenant name of God, Yahweh. So the reality that Yahweh speaks would have been an expectation for Jonah because he's heard from the Lord before, and probably would have been an expectation for the people of Israel because they knew the stories of their past, that God spoke to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Samuel and David. This reality that our God is a God who speaks was an expectation for them. Now, as we consider Jonah's story beginning with God coming to him and speaking to him, I think that's sort of a moment for us to reflect. When is the last time that we thought about our God being a speaking God? Has that reality that he speaks grown cold in our hearts? Do we live with an expectation that our God has spoken and is still speaking and that he wants to speak to us? I think sometimes some of us act like God is like the toys in Toy Story, right? Like he speaks, but just not when I'm in the room. He speaks, but he doesn't speak for me. He speaks for those people or in that situation, or he spoke a long time ago. But we need to realize that that's not a God problem. That's an us problem. We need to grow in our expectation of him speaking. It's really hard for us to experience something if we have no expectancy that it might happen. So if we discount that our God speaks, we're probably not going to hear him speak. Now, sometimes I find it that the Bible itself is the greatest motivator for me to have this expectancy for God to speak. Passages like Psalm 29, where it says this, "The voice of the Lord is over the waters. The God of glory thunders, the Lord over many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. The Lord breaks the cedars of Lebanon. He makes Lebanon to skip like a calf and Sirion like a young wild ox. The voice of the Lord flashes forth flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. The Lord shakes the wilderness of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord makes the deer give birth and strips the forest bare. And in his temple, all cry, what? Glory." Like when I read that passage, and I've read it like a dozen times prepping for this sermon, I'm like, yes, like I want that in my life. Like I want to see trees exploding and things like skipping like calves. I don't even know what that means, but it sounds like pretty cool. The psalmist recounts what the voice of the Lord does, and it does some crazy things. And it has, if we think back, it's done some crazy things in our lives. But are we living with the expectancy that God would speak to us? As Christians, we serve the living God who has spoken and is still speaking today. Well, then we might ask, right? Like, all right, well, how does he speak? Well, he speaks at least in these five ways. So I'm going to be real practical here. He speaks through his creation. Right, the youth during our trip this year, we took a hike in Big Trees. And there were several moments on that hike where I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then to think that that's like not even like 1% of how amazing the creator who made it is. God speaks through his word, even as we're doing it right now. We're just like opening up his word and we're talking about it. God speaks through his spirit. He has given each of us who call him Lord, his helper, to speak, to guide us to Jesus, to remind us of what's in his word. God speaks through his community, even this morning, as I am teaching, as we are fellowshipping, as the worship team is singing. This is ways in which God speaks to his people. And then finally, God speaks through Jesus. We just literally spent a whole year talking about how that's true in the book of Hebrews. So many times we find ourselves frustrated by what we think is the silence of God, but we forget the wealth of grace that God has provided, at least in these five ways in which he speaks. So I think this is a diagnostic moment for us this morning. Do we have an expectation that God speaks and that he's going to speak to us? Are we putting ourselves into the pathways of hearing his voice by reading his word, by being with his community, and by being filled and asking to be filled with his spirit? This morning, Jonah isn't necessarily faced with the question, does God speak? What Jonah is going to be faced with is whether or not he's going to listen. So let's move to the God who calls. As we consider the God who speaks, well, it might be good to consider, well, what sorts of things might God say to us? my wife, Rachel, and my two sons, Jonah and Thomas, they headed out this week up to Eastern Washington where my in-laws live. And as I prepared for Rachel and the boys to leave, I started making a list of all of the super really important things that I wanted to do while they were gone. Things like watch Lord of the Rings, right? Super important. I also wanted to eat bratwurst, was something that was on my list. And I also wanted to not wake up in the middle of the night because I was snoring, right? And so all of these things were things that were on my list. I also am trying to eat as much gluten this week as possible. My wife is gluten-free, so if you have any extra gluten, I will be happy to take it off your hands. But I knew that as I was preparing my list, that Rachel was preparing a list of her own for me. And I could almost anticipate to a T what Rachel wanted me to accomplish while she was gone. And that's because that's what happens when you're in a relationship. We feel and see and hear one another and can almost anticipate one another. And this is how our relationship with God can be, right? Like, we know him. It's like Buddy the Elf, like, I know him, right? Like, we know him. And we know the sorts of things that make up his character and make up the things that he says as we're pressing into the ways in which he speaks. And so the words of God to Jonah in Jonah chapter 1 are actually really good for us to hear and to know, because these are things that God tells us to do actually quite a bit in his scripture. So in chapter 1, verse 2, this is the first thing that God says to Jonah. Arise, go. God tells Jonah to arise and go. He tells Jonah to arise, to stand up, to make himself ready, to begin to move. When God speaks, it requires movement. We see this all throughout the Bible. The people of God are a people who are always arising, making themselves ready to move. The Christian life isn't one where we sit on our hands and we just chill out. It's a life of arising in the morning to be with God. It's a life of arising at work to work excellently at what God has given us to do. It's a life of arising at school to do the things that God has for us there. It's of arising in our neighborhoods to be good neighbors. The second thing that God tells Jonah is to go. Specifically, God tells Jonah to go to Nineveh. The life of God's people is one of being sent. That doesn't mean that we're all going to Nineveh, but it does mean that we're all being sent. If you are a follower of God, you are sent where you are. You are sent here, sitting in these pews. You are sent at your job. You are sent at your school. You are sent in your neighborhood. You are even sent at your grocery store. The place that you occupy is not just a place for your bottom to rest, but it's a place for you to fill with God's glory through the way that you live your life and the way in which you live out the call of God on your life. As Christians, we consider this idea of arising and going. We often use the word call. So our God speaks, and then he gives us a calling, right? What we're meant to do. In Jonah's life, it was to go to Nineveh. This is what the rest of that verse says. It says, dun, 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 arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. I think when we consider this verse, it sounds like kind of straightforward, right? All right, Jonah, get up, pack your bags, and go to Nineveh and call out against it. The words seem rather easy, but we know the story. Jonah doesn't get swallowed by a fish preaching a sermon in the middle of Nineveh. Jonah chose a different path. In Jonah chapter 1, verse 3, this is what it says. Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. So Jonah hears the word of the Lord. And he gets the first part right. He rose. But not to go to Nineveh, but to flee from the presence of the Lord. Jonah packs his things and he's like, I'm out. I've had enough. He's so offended and he's so disturbed by the call of God in his life that he runs, not just spiritually, but he feels like he's got to get out physically. And where's Jonah going? So it tells us that he goes down to Joppa to get to Tarshish. So from his home in northern Israel, he would have traveled northeast to get to Nineveh. And Jonah goes southwest to get to Joppa. So he literally goes in the opposite direction. Now we may be inclined to ask, well, why? Why does Jonah run? Was it because the call of God was too hard? Did he think, well, there's just no hope in winning here, so I'm just going to run? John Calvin tells us this about God's call on Jonah's life. What then could he hope when the Lord removed him to Nineveh for unbridled licentiousness ruled there? There was also their extreme blindness. They had no knowledge of divine worship. In a word, they were sunk in extreme darkness, and the devil in every way reigned there. So is this why Jonah ran? Because it just seemed too hard. I think actually take a step back and we remember that Jonah's like a real person and not just like a story. I think that we can imagine that this call of God for Jonah was difficult, unexpected, and it was offensive. It was difficult for the reason above, right? I mean, he's going somewhere that he doesn't know to a people he doesn't know that don't necessarily want the message that he is going to give. It was really unexpected because as a prophet of God, yes, he's used to hearing the word of the Lord, but he's used to communicating that to God's people. Like God's prophets weren't sent out of Israel to other nations. It was also offensive because the Ninevites weren't just another nation, but they were the active enemies of Israel. Tim Keller sort of gives us some more color to this in this quote here. It was even more shocking that the God of Israel would want to warn Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, of impending doom. Assyria was one of the cruelest and most violent empires of ancient times. Assyrian kings often recorded the results of their military victories, gloating of whole plains littered with corpses and of cities burned completely to the ground. After capturing enemies, the Assyrians would typically cut off their legs and one arm, leaving the other arm in hand so they could shake the victim's hand in mockery as he was dying. They forced friends and family members to parade with decapitated heads of their loved ones elevated on poles. And then actually the description goes on to describe more atrocities and more brutality, but I thought that was probably enough. So we're not told in verse 3 of chapter 1 why Jonah ran, just that he did. But towards the end of the book of Jonah, after the Ninevites repent and God shows them mercy, in Jonah chapter 4 verse 2, Jonah himself actually tells us why he ran. This is what he says to God. Oh Lord, is not this what I said when I was yet in my country? That is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish. For I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. Jonah didn't run because he was afraid of failing. Jonah ran because he was afraid of succeeding. Jonah was well acquainted with God. Jonah knew that God was gracious and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. And Jonah could not imagine following the call of God on his life to go to these brutal, terrible people and to offer them any sort of mercy. He just heard the call of God and he was like, no way. No way, because he knew that the character of God was one of mercy and grace. And Jonah didn't want to be a part of it. He didn't want any part of that call of God on his life. I wonder when we hear the call of God described in this way, difficult, unexpected, offensive. Maybe for some of us, that resonates with our experience of hearing the call of God on our lives. When we search the scriptures, we see that God often says things or asks his people to do things that are hard. At times, Jesus' life and his teachings can be so counterintuitive to every bit of human logic that is inside of us. At times, situations in our lives seem daunting, and we want to run. But the call of God on our lives is to stand on the word of God. At times, with difficult situations with people in our families or in our communities, the call of God commands us to offer mercy and forgiveness. And that's just like literally like the last thing that we want to do. At times in our jobs or our school situations, there's opportunities to compromise. There's opportunities to bend the truth a little bit. But we know that the call of God on our lives is to stand for the truth and to not bend, but to stand for what is right. As we read the scriptures, as well as when we experience the Christian life individually, but also as a community, the call of God can be hard. It can be exhausting. It can be like super untimely. You're like, really? Like you chose like right now? And it can be the last thing we want to do sometimes. As we look at the call of God on Jonah's life, some of us may be thinking, well, I'm glad I'm not him. But Jesus says in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 6, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you and bless those who curse you and pray for those who abuse you. Are we prepared as individuals and as a community to answer this call of Jesus on our lives? To love your enemies, to actively seek good for those that hate us and bless those that curse us and pray for those that abuse us. Are we prepared for that? Because it's not like Jesus says, you know, it would be really nice if you could think about praying about maybe loving your enemies this week. He says, no, like, this is what we do. This is what you're going to do because this is what I do. And this is just like one of the commands of God. This is just like one of the calls of God on our lives. Perhaps you can right now recall another call of God on your life that you feel is difficult or offensive or unexpected. Like Jonah, are you going to run? Maybe you're like sitting in this pew right now, like, I want to run out of this room right now. Or maybe you've been on the run, running away like Jonah ran away. We don't have to run from it being hard, right? There's a whole group of people in this room who are ready to lock arms together to say, yeah, like sometimes denying myself and taking up my cross is really hard. And that's why we have to come together to pursue the call of God on our lives as individuals and the call of God on our lives as a community to do it together. Like we need each other. It's a shout out for group life right there. Something that is awesome about our God is that when we're struggling, and maybe that's you right now, like you're like, yeah, like I am struggling. When we're struggling, he's pursuing. And I love that about God. When we are at our lowest, when we are struggling the hardest, he is pursuing us. And that's how we're going to end our time. The God who pursues. One of the themes of the book of Jonah is this idea that God continues to pursue Jonah. Jonah is struggling. And as you continue to read his book, he continues to struggle. And yet, God continues to love him, to care for him, and to pursue him. God doesn't give up on Jonah. And I think some of us need to hear that this morning. God doesn't give up on you. And we see the beginning of that pursuit in verse 4, where it says this, "But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up." Though Jonah refuses to go to the enemy, though Jonah steps out in sin, right, blatant, outright rebellion against God, God pursues him first with a storm. And as you read the story, God continues to pursue Jonah in other ways, even as Jonah continues to not listen or to revert to selfishness. This is the kind of God that we serve, a God that pursues us. In the book of Jonah, God pursues Jonah in a storm. He pursues him in a great fish by sitting with his prophet outside of Nineveh, as literally he's just having a pity party. God never stops pursuing Jonah. As we discussed the call previously, this idea of our call is to arise and go. All throughout the story, God is arising and going all throughout the story. He's not moving away from Jonah, but he keeps moving in and in and in, perhaps to maybe an uncomfortable level at times. And we need to hear that this morning. Our God isn't a God who moves away from us when we're struggling, but he's a God that moves in. Like Jonah, we need God's pursuit in our lives. How many times do we wander? Do we stray? Like Jonah, do we just like straight up disobey? How often in times like that do we just think that God must be keeping his distance from me? But we need to hear, like Jonah, God does not leave us. God does not forsake us. We need to remember the words of the Apostle Paul in the book of Romans, but God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his son, much more now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by his life. Like Jonah, we didn't get to God. God got to us in Jesus Christ. Like Jonah, Jesus was sent by God. Like Jonah, Jesus arose from his heavenly throne room, and he came to earth to preach the mercy of God to his enemies, and so were some of us. Where Jonah said no, Jesus said yes. Not only did Jesus preach mercy, but he became the source of mercy by sacrificing himself on the cross. So Jesus does Jonah one better. He doesn't just travel to his enemies and preach mercy, but he literally sacrificed his life so that those enemies could be saved and receive mercy. We were once like the Ninevites, right? In darkness and evil and in need of mercy. And Jesus came, answering the call of his Father to give us life. He pursued us. So maybe you're on the run this morning. Maybe you've like, I already made it to Tarshish and I've been hiding from the presence of the Lord for some time. He's pursuing you right now. The best place for you is in the center of the call of God on your life, even if that call is hard. His call to you this morning is come home. Perhaps other of us, we're struggling with the call of God on our lives. We're like, yeah, I'm on the struggle bus right now, and I don't know what to do. We need to remember that Jesus is the goal, that he's the one that we're pursuing, that he's the one that we're after. Let's lay aside the weights and ask God to fill us with courage to face the call that he has in our lives. And I'll let you know that that actually was prayed over all of you this morning at our all church prayer, that God would give us courage to walk in the things that he has called us to. Other of us, maybe we just like left you at the beginning, at the first point, waiting for God to speak. Open yourselves up this morning to the expectation that God speaks. Maybe it's recommitting to morning devotions this morning, or maybe it's recommitting to his community, or maybe you need to stop and to pray that you would be filled with the Spirit. Let's be a community that expects and opens our ears for our God to speak. As I was prepping for this sermon, as I was thinking about those application points, I really got this sense that one of the things that God is calling us to is to be in prayer for one another. So if you are struggling this morning, I would really encourage you to turn to your pew mate and ask for prayer. Or go to the back where there is a prayer team after the Lord's Supper and ask for a prayer. Like, we need to fill this place with our prayers and our requests of God to do mighty things. As we say in the youth group, yeah, that might be awkward. It might be awkward for you to turn to your pewmate and be like, I need prayer this morning. But press into the awkwardness, because that's where God does amazing things.